Welcome to the Men on Purpose podcast, featuring dynamic conversations with emerging and established visionary men on purpose. Thanks for joining us today as we celebrate the men on purpose who are committed, creative, courageous change makers all around the world. Now, here's the host of Men on Purpose, Emerald Greenforest.
And welcome to another episode of the Men on Purpose podcast, where we celebrate men on purpose and provide our listeners with immediately actionable steps to be more purposeful, powerful, and positive in their impact and their leadership. This is your host, Emerald Greenforest, and today we welcome our very special guest, Matthew Dix. Matt is the internationally best-selling author of the novels Memoirs of an Imaginary Friend, Something Missing, Unexpectedly Milo, The Perfect Comeback of Caroline Jacobs, and the upcoming The Other Mother. His novels have been translated into more than 25 languages worldwide. Memoirs of an Imaginary Friend was the 2014 Dolly Gray Award winner and is nominated for a 2017 Nutmeg Award in Connecticut. When not hunched over a computer screen, Matt fills his days as an elementary school teacher, a storyteller, a speaking coach, a blogger, a wedding DJ, a minister, a life coach, and a Lord of Sealand. He has been teaching for 18 years and is a former West Hartford Teacher of the Year and a finalist for Connecticut Teacher of the Year. Matthew's also the co-founder and creative director of Speak Up, a Hartford-based storytelling organization that produces shows throughout New England. He teaches storytelling and public speaking to individuals, corporations, and school districts around the world. He's most recently taught at Yale, the University of Connecticut Law School, Purdue University, the Connecticut Historical Society, Kripalu Center for Yoga and Health, Miss Porter School, the Berkshire School, and Graded School in Sao Paulo, Brazil. Matthew is the creator and co-host of Boy vs. Girl, a podcast about gender and gender stereotypes, and he's married to friend and fellow teacher Alicia. He is also the author of Storyworthy, which I just had the opportunity to read and is going to be teaching at Kripalu Center in December of this year, in 2018. And I have already signed myself up to go to his workshop. So Matthew, I am so excited to have you here. Matt, I'll call you Matt. I'm so excited to have you here. Welcome to the Men on Purpose podcast.
Thank you. That was quite an introduction. I always say that I like a low bar, and that was not a low bar.
Well, you have a great PR team, and they sent that along to us, and so that was your introduction. But you know what's really fascinating, Matt, is I actually read Storyworthy from cover to cover, because part of what I do in my own business and life is I do speak a lot, and I do know the power of story and storytelling when you are speaking, and so you have some pretty immense and intense stories behind you. So I want to ask, the first question I want to ask is about your calling, because clearly you are called to serve. And so I'd love to have you tell the story of when you recognized that you had a calling and maybe what it felt like to have that calling and to answer it.
Well, that's a tricky question. I mean, I'm an elementary school teacher. So, you know, that was really my first calling in terms of reaching other people and teaching them and changing their lives. And truthfully, that calling came as a kid. I grew up in a very dysfunctional household with parents who were marginally interested in my life at times. And my safest, best place was at school. And so many of the most important people in my life were teachers. And so, you know, I'd never thought I was going to be anything but a teacher because of that. You know, when I was a kid, I didn't even really know about a lot of other jobs, to be honest with you. If no one tells you that accountants and, you know, dishwashers and bakers, like I didn't even know these people existed. So for me, it was always going to be a teacher, no matter how hard it was to get there. So, you know, when I think about all the things that I do, I always think that that is my primary calling. And I took it to storytelling. Now I teach storytelling very much so in the same way that I teach 10-year-olds. I use the same strategies and the same techniques, and the people are larger and they have more to say, but it's about the same.
Beautiful. So at the core of who you are, then the calling is to be a teacher. And, you know, I would also say, Matt, that your stories are teaching stories too. Would that be fair to say that you have, a lot of your stories are teaching stories. They have some kind of worth to them, right?
Yes. I tell people that my hope is that you take something away from my stories that might help you see yourself or the world in a different way. But I also say that the first and primary function of all stories is to be entertaining. You know, if you just find entertainment and joy in a story that I tell, but you take nothing away from it, I'm fine with that. Because if we're not entertaining, no one's willing to listen to us. Mm-hmm. And so I try to do that first. And then if someone learns something or, you know, becomes a better person as a result of hearing something that I say, that's gravy on top that I hope comes, but is not necessary.
Beautiful. Well, I also believe that men on purpose are courageous. And from the stories that I read in Story Worthy, you have been extremely courageous in multiple incidents across your life. So I'd love to have you tell us a short story about courage, Matthew.
Oh, you know, I guess the story that I would tell is a story that I recently told. And, you know, maybe it's not really as much about me as it is about a student. You know, I had a boy in my class named Nathan a few years ago. And Nathan was the first person I had met who refused to pledge allegiance to the flag. He was opposed to the wars overseas. And at the age of 10, he had decided, I'm not pledging allegiance until we bring our soldiers home. And when I was a kid, I also wanted to stop pledging allegiance. I learned at Boy Scout camp that the phrase under God had been added to the pledge in 1954 by the Knights of Columbus, a campaign that they pushed forth to get religion more into the national consciousness. And being a person who back then and today didn't like that, you know, I didn't like that forceful insertion of religion into the world or into America, given, you know, our fundamental rights, I wanted to protest the flag and the pledge specifically, but I couldn't do it. I never found the courage to do it. I was always at a Boy Scout retreat or, you know, eventually I became a teacher and I just always felt the obligation because I love my country and I didn't want anyone to think I wasn't patriotic. And then I met Nathan and he was not pledging allegiance. And I just thought, you know, what a wonderful thing that he's brave enough to do that. And then one day I was absent. I was at professional development, you know, having my life changed in some deep and meaningful way. And while I was gone, the substitute forced Nathan to stand up and pledge allegiance to the flag. And he did in order to like maintain order in the class. He didn't fight it. But his father called me that night and he was so angry. And I knew the father well. I had taught his other children. And, you know, I told his father, I'm going to take care of this and I won't, you know, let it stand. And the next day I went to school and I apologized to Nathan. And just as I was apologizing to him, the speaker came on to pledge allegiance. And I stood to pledge allegiance and Nathan stayed seated. But every single kid in my class stayed in their seats to protest, not the pledge or the flag, but to protest what had happened to Nathan. And that was the first time that I had ever sat down for the Pledge of Allegiance with my class. They gave me the courage to sit down and not pledge that day. And for the rest of that year, my class and I stayed in our seats during the pledge, silent and respectful, but not pledging in protest of the idea that someone could be forced to pledge when they chose not to. But it's much more the courage of Nathan and some students who finally gave me the courage that I could not find until I was 46.
Oh, yeah, beautiful. It took a while. Beautiful story, Matt. I love that story. And I love Matthew and
Nathan.
Yes. I love Nathan. And I tell Nathan when you talk to him again that I would happily sit with him as well. I believe that words create spells. And I believe also that sound works to inoculate people into certain directions, right? To inculcate people. And I have had a very big challenge for many years with the Star Spangled Banner because it glorifies war. And I would like our national anthem to be America the Beautiful, because I think if we changed our national anthem to America the Beautiful, we would have a very, very different cultural vibe that we would be nourishing than one that glorifies war at all costs. And so Nathan and you and I are all in alignment around that. So
that's wonderful.
Yeah. So thank you. And you know, to really preserve the rights that we have to be opposed to things is super important, I think.
Yes, it
especially is. Especially now. So let's talk about your creations, because you are a powerful creator. You've created a lot of novels. You've created Speak Up. You've created the When Girl and Boy podcast, and you've created the Speak Up storytelling podcast with your wife, Alicia. So you are a powerful and prolific creator, Matt. And I'd love to have you tell me about your creative process, and what can you offer our Men on Purpose around the world about the creative process, like what it feels like, or what your rituals are, or what you do when you're not feeling the flow, or, you know, whatever, however you want to take us on this question is great, Matt.
Sure. I guess the key for me is I tell people I say yes to everything. I hear a lot of people nowadays talking about how you have to learn to say no and, you know, carve out your time and hold it as precious. And I always think that's a terrible mistake. So every opportunity that presents itself to me, I say yes to it, because I believe that saying yes still affords me the opportunity to say no later on, once I've learned more about it and given it a chance to take hold. But an instant no just closes a door. And so creatively, by saying yes constantly to everything that comes across my path, I end up doing these things that are unexpected and wonderful. You know, my podcasts are the result of saying yes to someone. I write musicals now with a person who writes music and wanted to write a musical and didn't know how to write stories. I had no desire to write musicals. I didn't know anything about it. I initially started to say no to him. I remember I actually physically began to say no, and then I said, actually, I have to say yes, and we'll see how it goes. And it's went beautifully. My DJ company was the act of my best friend calling me and saying, I didn't like my wedding DJ. I think you and I could be better DJs. And I thought, I don't want to be a wedding DJ. I don't know anything about being a wedding DJ. I've only been to 2 weddings in my entire life. Why would I ever think I could be a wedding DJ? But I said yes. And as a result, it's a 20-year career with a best friend of mine. And in a lot of ways, as a storyteller, 20 years of being a wedding DJ and standing in front of 200 people and speaking extemporaneously every weekend really helped me when I finally made it to the stage and started telling stories of my own. And so that idea that I say yes to everything, and I don't think of myself as a novelist or as a column writer or as a humorist or a storyteller, but I am just everything that the world sort of wants to hand to me. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, I always feel the flow, because I'm working on a novel and I'm supposed to have it done by a certain time. It's like December 10th that's supposed to be in. And that's my primary focus. But when it's not working for me, when I'm not feeling the flow, I'll say, all right, I'll go work on a story that I'm going to tell on the stage, or I'm going to go work on that children's book I'm working on, or I'll go work on the musical I'm writing with my friend. So as long as I fill my life with these creative endeavors, and especially when they're all so different and disparate from another, I always have the flow, because there's always something I can turn to. And on the rare occasions when there isn't something to turn to, I just start something new. I say, I will do something I've never done before. I'll begin a poem. I will write a poem tonight and see what happens. And so I just say yes. I just fill my life with this ability to be creative in a multitude of ways. And that's really been great for me.
Oh, beautiful. Well, thank you for all of the yeses that you've said, Matt, because you are really making a huge impact in so many areas around the world. When I was reading what you are up to, I said, oh my goodness, how does he manage all of this? But I hear what you're saying, and as a creator myself, I find that I have times where, you know, I made jewelry for a while, and I would sit down and make 45 pieces of jewelry in 3 days, and then I didn't want to touch it for 6 months. So
yes.
I would go over and make paintings, and, you know, then I'd make 25 paintings, and then I didn't want to touch it for 6 months. And so letting the flow take you to where your kind of passion is in the moment, then you can come to everything that you have going on wholeheartedly. So
yeah,
awesome.
That's great.
All right. Well, we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back in just a moment. I want to thank all of our listeners who are downloading, rating, and reviewing. We've already had thousands of downloads from all over the world. I want to shout out this week to our listeners in Connecticut, because that's where Matthew lives. We did add this week to our list of listeners around the world, we added Honduras and Austria too. So, but this week it's going to be Connecticut. We're going to say, hey, Connecticut, and thank you for listening. And we will be right back with Matthew Dix.
The Men on Purpose podcast is brought to you by the Creative Age Consulting Group. Men, are you ready to take the leap and go deep to discover the most meaningful mark you can make with your life? Is now the time to consciously craft the legacy life you want to lead? Are you already a legendary leader looking for your big what's next? Creative Age Consulting Group is hired to help men just like you to gain clarity, create consciously, and commit courageously. Please visit timetomakeyourmark.com to apply for an invitation-only consultation. Be sure to apply for a consultation today if you have been inspired to receive support in serving your purpose and making your most meaningful mark. Once again, that's timetomakeyourmark.com or click on the link in the show notes for access to the application.
And we are back with Matt Dix, the author of Storyworthy, the creator of Speak Up, and a Moth 36-time Grand Slam winner, I think, something along those lines.
Something like that.
Something like that. And before we went to the break, we were talking about creation. So now what I want to talk to you about, Matt, is clarity. How do you, you know, when you're saying yes all the time to a lot of things, and you've got a wife, and you've got kids, and you're a teacher, and you're doing Speak Up, and you got your podcast, and you're doing music. I mean, you've got a lot of things that you're doing. Do you have any practices for staying clear?
You know, I was interviewed by a magazine writer recently, and she said to me, she said, how do you juggle so many balls at once? And I said, only a fool would try to juggle so many balls at once. I said, don't view it as me juggling balls, but imagine there's just a bunch of balls in front of me. And I pick one up, and it's the novel I'm working on. And I hold that for a while, and I focus solely on that thing. I ignore all the rest. And when I'm done with that, I put that ball down. And then I pick up another one. So there's never that process of like a bunch of things happening at once for me. It is always when I'm dealing with this creative endeavor, it gets 100% of my energies, and everything else is, you know, irrelevant to me. The only thing that honestly can interrupt that process is my children. I have the policy that if they ask me to play, regardless of what I'm doing, I stop and I play. But other than that, you know, if I decide I'm going to spend the next hour working on my novel, it's the only thing I'm going to do for that hour, as long as the flow is going and everything's working well. So people often see my life as like an impossible juggling act. And I say, it's not that at all. It's simply moving from one thing to another in a methodical way and not allowing distractions to interfere. It does mean that I let go of things that I care about. So like, I love television, genuinely love television. But I can tell you I've now gone, I think it's 13 days without the television being turned on. Because I know that when I'm 90, you know, if I haven't watched Ozark yet, which like the world tells me you have to watch Ozark, I know that at 90, either that'll be the time I have, like that's a good time to watch Ozark when you're 90, or I'll be on my deathbed thinking, like there won't be regret. I won't be lying on my deathbed thinking, oh no, I never watched Ozark. My life will not be complete. So although I love television, it's something I've let go. And so, you know, I kind of structure my life in that way. I look at things differently and I say, where can I recapture time? Where can I be focused? What do I want to have said that I did at the end of the day? Do I want to say I watched Ozark, or do I want to say I pumped out another 30 pages of that novel that will exist long after I am gone? Mm. And I would rather do that. And so I'm sort of disciplined in that way, that I'm always thinking towards, you know, what do I want from myself? What does the future version of me want me to be doing now? And I just listen to that future version of myself who says, turn off the damn television and do the work that you were made to do. And so I do that.
Mm, such a man on purpose. I hope everyone's listening. And I so appreciate the commitment that you have to approach each of the things that you are putting your energy into 100% wholeheartedly, because if you weren't doing that, everything would be a shit show, Matthew. I'm sure, you know, like it wouldn't be possible. And
right.
So I think when we're fully committing, and that's another question, you know, do you have an internal like practice to help you to stay committed? Like, what is your secret sauce for conjuring up that level of commitment that says, okay, I'm working on the novel now, you know, is it that flow? Is it the energetic flow? Is it the creative flow that you're just, is that the higher commitment that you're committed to? Talk about the commitment piece.
No, it's not the flow. you know, it's two things really. When I was in Brazil, I was doing Q&A in front of 700 kids, and the kids said, you know, you write books, you speak, you podcast, you make so much stuff. Why are you making so much stuff? Why do you feel the need to put yourself out there? And it was the first time someone had really asked me that question so pointedly. And the answer just popped right into my head unexpectedly. I said, I think I'm trying to get the attention of a mother who never paid attention to me and has now passed away, and a father who left when I was 7 and has never really returned. And I think that's part of it. I think part of it is I spent my childhood desperately seeking attention that I could not get. And I think part of it is that boy is still within me, desperately trying to shout at the world that I exist and that I am here. But also, when I was 21, I was in an armed robbery and in a restaurant. I was managing a McDonald's restaurant in Brockton, Massachusetts, and a gun was put to my head because a part of the safe that I was supposed to open for them, I could not open. It was one of those manager does not have key moments, and they didn't believe it. And so they put the gun to my head and they counted back from 3 and told me that they were going to kill me if I didn't open the safe. And they were men who I already knew had killed other people. The police had come and warned me that these men were robbing restaurants. And so I thought my life was over for sure. You know, lying on a greasy tile floor, I 100% believed that I was going to die. And the feeling that you have at 21 when you think you're going to die and you think about how little you have accomplished and how you will 100% be forgotten, that 100 years from now, no one will know Matthew Dix ever existed. That feeling has never left me. It's with me all the time. And thank goodness when they pulled the trigger, there were no bullets in the gun and they were just torturing me. And, you know, I led to a lifetime of PTSD, but it also led to a lifetime of relentlessness. That's the word my wife uses. She says, I am just constantly relentless in my desire to ensure that every minute of my day is spent well. And so I think it's the combination of those two things, which I don't know how is, you know, people have told me that's not very helpful. Because my parents paid attention to me and I've never been in a situation with a man and a gun. So how does that help me? And the only thing I say is just as hard as it may be, there's going to come a time in your life when you're going to look back and there may be regret. And I'm here to report how terrible regret is. You know, I'm reporting from that time that it's just awful. And if you look at the work of hospice workers, which I'm really interested in all the time, what hospice workers will report back to us on, you know, as someone's passing away and approaching death, they'll often tell the hospice workers what they regret. And if you read about those people's regrets, they're just things that I never want to have happen to me in my last days. I don't want that. So it's a desperate attempt to avoid regret that keeps me relentless and moving forward.
Yeah. So what I would say to that, Matt, is that death has been your informer since you were 21.
Yeah.
And that's something that I learned in my medicine work in the Inca tradition. I'm a medicine bundle carrier in the shamanic tradition of the Inca people. Yeah. And one of the directions, the West direction, is where we meet death. And we have the, you know, the eulogy, and we go through the process of literally dying, not in the same way that you did, but my teachers taught about death being your informer, like whispering in your ear, like, you know, when you come to the end, is this how you want to be remembered, kind of thing. And so you also are making conscious choice. Like, it sounds like every moment you're making the choice to say, I will have no regrets.
Right.
I will have no regrets.
Yes. Yeah. Take advantage of every moment of the day is something I do. And I've met other near-death survivors, and we all, when we talk, it's almost like we don't have to talk.
Sure.
You know, and I life coach with people. And I once had a guy tell me that he knows two people who have had situations like me. And he said, both of you are the same way. And I wish I could be that way.
Sure.
And I say, well, just choose to be that way rather than having to go through the awfulness of, you know, discovering it that way. Like, discover it through me instead. I'm not sure how easy that is.
Yeah. Well, you and I share some stories. I actually was involved in a armed robbery as well when I was about 21. And I also have been involved in several near-death experiences with guns. And yeah. So we both have that sort of stuff going on, and it definitely informs you. Death informs you. And, yeah. And it creates a different path for people who are deciding to be conscious about how they're spending their life. So awesome. Well, I want to close with the celebration question because, first of all, I want to celebrate you
for all
of your accomplishments. I want to celebrate you for choosing to have no regrets. I want to celebrate you for taking and, you know, turning the lemons into lemonade and not just turning the lemons into lemonade, but then serving it into the world. How do you celebrate when you have completed something that you set your mind to and have invested wholeheartedly in?
You know, it's funny. One of the ways I celebrate is sort of like when I finish reading a book, I'm so excited because it means I get to read a new book. I almost celebrate that way. Whereas I finish something and the celebration is I get to redirect my focus on something new and exciting. And so that is my primary form of celebration, is to move on to something new and fun. You know, I guess the other way I celebrate is really with my children. You know, I want my children to see what happens when you put hard work into something. So they see, you know, they come down every morning. They used to think I didn't sleep because they never saw me sleeping because I was always, you know, awake when they went to bed and awake when they woke up. And they see the work that I put in. So I make sure that they have the opportunity to see the fruits of the labor, that I want them to understand that you work hard and, you know, you stay focused and you can produce something that you can really be proud of. So I celebrate with them briefly. And then I celebrate by moving on to the next wonderful thing that I get to do.
Nice. I love get to do. That's such a beautiful way of framing it. I also, you know, sometimes I have a little challenge with the work hard thing, Matthew, because I think when you are the kind of guy that you are, you're just really devoting. You're devoting your energy. You're focusing your energy and you're wholeheartedly showing up for what is in front of you. Which, you know, sometimes I think we get confused with this whole idea, just work hard and everything's going to work out, because that's not the truth.
No, it's not. I mean, I guess when I say work hard, really what I'm saying is choose the things that you will be proud of in the future rather than choosing the things that will make you happy in the moment.
Right. And then show up fully for them. Show up fully for those things that you're choosing.
Yeah. Right. Yes. Be complete in your focus and your attention to those things.
Yeah. Beautiful. Well, Matthew Dix, it was my pleasure, and I cannot wait to meet you in person and spend time immersed under your tutorship for the storytelling. And I want to just say thank you to all of our listeners. We love feedback. Please let us know what you thought of today's show, or send in questions or guest suggestions to listeners at menonpurposepodcast.com. We might even give you a shout out on the show. And I'm actually going to shout out today to Nathan in Matthew Dix's class. That's going to be our shout out for today's show.
That's great.
Thanks for tuning in. Keep your ears open. And remember Nathan, and remember Matthew, and remember all of you listeners, you are magnificent men.
Thanks for tuning in, downloading, and listening. Be sure to review and rate Men on Purpose on iTunes and share with other men who can benefit from today's episode. Men on Purpose is the premier podcast series for informing, activating, and inspiring the leader who has made his money and knows that now is the time to make his mark. We welcome your feedback and guest suggestions and invite you to subscribe to our mailing list to be notified of each new episode at menonpurposepodcast.com.